Good afternoon. I'm Pamela Josie. I'm with Agriculture Agri-Food Canada, and today I'm talking about a little different geography and perspective on soil and water conservation or land management, as this session was entitled. And it's not experimental, it's much more observational, where we've been defining and analyzing ag production systems to determine the capacity to make soil and nutrient management improvements in the Canadian Lake Erie Basin. My co-authors are Keith Reed, Ted Huffman, and Natalie Feistown. We're all from the Science and Technology branch of Ag Canada. So for those of you who might be unfamiliar where I'm talking about today, about the Lake Erie Basin, here's Canada to the north, very far north of where we are today, and Lake Erie is the shallowest and smallest of the five Great Lakes. The Canadian portion is the shaded area to the north. And I know there's many talks here about Ohio and some of the issues there. And if you're familiar with Lake Erie at all, sort of why we're concerned about right now are returning algal blooms to the Lake Erie Basin. And non-point source agriculture phosphorus sources are being identified as a major place we need to make improvements. So just some context for this is the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement. This has been re-signed in 2012. The first one was actually signed back in 1972, so this is not a new issue for the Great Lakes, in particular Lake Erie. And Canada and the U.S. have agreed to develop domestic action plans to reduce phosphorus loading to Lake Erie by 2018. And so we require some Canadian agricultural system information to make sure that these action plans are effective and realistic. So the project objectives were to identify ag production systems and landscapes where there's capacity to make improvements in nutrient and soil management, and to conduct historical analyses to put this capacity for future change in context with what has already occurred. So to do this, I'm using the ag census. So it's, again, not experimental, but using a census topology methodology where we delineate production systems, we were looking at the perspective of soil nutrient and water management characteristics. There are other classification systems out there, often based on economic parameters or means. But because we're concerned about phosphorus here and the biophysical nature of things, we wanted to do this from soil and nutrient water characteristics. So we developed rule sets that were then worked with Statistics Canada to develop code to apply to the Census of Agriculture microdata or individual farm data. So each farm gets classified as one particular farm type. And you create. We also created this as a three-level hierarchy. That facilitates rolling up if there's suppression as we get more specific. We need to be able to generalize. We can also kind of focus on different parts of the hierarchy without losing the total perspective. We asked for four different geographies, township, county, province, and then a custom Lake Erie geography, which I'm using today, and it was just basically an area weighting of the different, township-level information to the watershed boundary of Lake Erie. And four different census years, 1981, 91, 2001, and 2011. Again, we've had this issue for about 40 years in the Great Lakes. And received 90 output variables from Statistics Canada. This is just an overview of the production system rule set. On your very far left is the first level of the hierarchy. There we go. And these should all look like very familiar names. We wanted people to recognize the different production systems, mostly for communication, knowledge translation, and transfer activities. We want farmers to be able to recognize themselves. So the very highest level, the hierarchy, dealing with livestock, so where we have significant amounts of manure to deal with. Also concerned about different, especially in vegetable type systems where there might be higher than field crop type applications of nutrients, different kinds of tillage practices for these different systems. The other layer there, the second column more to your right, is the second level of the hierarchy, getting into specific species of livestock, particular crops. And when we got to the field crops, we're also interested in sort of the proportion or rotational nature of those systems. Looking at, in the Lake Erie Basin in particular, the corn, soy, and winter wheat, which are predominant crops, and how they're grown in combination. So you'll see down there the corn, I think this was working, there we go, if we jig a little enough. We had systems where corn, soy occupied 100% of the farm's cropland, to soy, winter wheat is also a common one where the only two crops being grown, or corn, soy, and winter wheat. And one of the assumptions here is that the crops being grown in that census year represent what that farm is growing in rotation. So that's the rule set. And why do we want to use something like that? When we usually get the census information back, we would get something like the total line here at the very bottom. For a particular geography, you just have a total of the different kinds of crops. As I mentioned, corn, soybean, and winter wheat are dominant ones here. But by using the production systems, we're kind of able to see which systems have ownership or are managing those different crops. So for example, here with the commercial livestock systems, you can see about a third of the corn crop in the Lake Erie Basin is being managed by farms that have livestock. That corn's more likely to be receiving manure, as an example. So that helps understand more about who is managing the different crops. So coming back now to this capacity assessment, and the example I'm going to use today is around soil management and tillage. So back in the 1980s, the issue for the Great Lakes and water quality was about focused on phosphorus losses by soil erosion. There was a big emphasis at the time. There was a Senate report at the time, soils at risk, because the farmers were also very concerned about soil degradation. So there was this win-win where the solution at the time was to adopt no-till on 400,000 hectares in the Lake Erie Basin at about, with a reduction of a half kilogram P per hectare associated with that to get a 200-ton phosphorus reduction, which was the goal back in 1987 or so. So if we look back in 1991, this is the first year that a question in the census was asked about how your land was prepared for seeding, or what kind of tillage you used. So back in 1991, the no-till here is purple, it's very narrow, only about 2% of the cropland had no-till preparation. And the largest proportion there was 42% by conventional or residue incorporated land preparation. Sorry, and the way the question is framed, why I'm calling it this way, they talk about most of the residue being incorporated before seeding, or where most of the residue is retained is the other part of the question, and then whether you have no-till or direct seeding. So 20 years later in 2011, you can see that we now have about 21% or a tenfold increase in the amount of no-till in the basin, and a subsequent decrease as well in the conventional or residue incorporated here. So we have made improvements here in having more no-till, but is there capacity for more no-till in the region? And we can look at the census question that asks about tillage, again, by the cropping or the different production systems. When we look at the total for the basin, we can see that about 33% of the cropland, and this is on a cropland, not the total basin area, so that's why it's slightly different than in the pie chart. But the cropland, about a third is no-till prepared. But that's on average, and so you can look at the differences between the systems. Who can make an improvement, and if we're going to get more no-till, where can that come from? And just two things I wanted to highlight here. These are very low no-till adopters right now, but if you look at the amount of the land base that has no land preparation, because essentially they're perennial systems, whether that's fruit orchards or vineyards or that kind of thing, or perennial system that we defined as 75% of your land in some kind of hay or forage. So they're not going to have a lot more room for more no-till added there. But the crops or the systems that also already have a lot are the soy winter wheat and corn soybean winter wheat, corn soy spring grain. Can we get more out of them or out of these other production systems? Who do we need to speak to or encourage their associations if we want to get more no-till adopted? And so one of the things that we're very well aware of is that no-till is not easy to adopt in all crops. In southern Ontario, most of the no-till seeding is done either of soybeans following corn, and that's the picture up in the top right, or of winter wheat after soybean, that's the bottom left corner. We don't have as much no-till of our corn. Our soils are a little heavier, cooler and wetter in the spring, and so we don't see a lot of no-till corn adoption. So if we're going to see more adoption of no-till, it's likely going to be in these two crops. So to test that, I want to look back in time to see this relationship between, again, looking at the production system breakdown of the proportion of cropland of a production system in soybean and winter wheat compared to the proportion of land that was no-till seeded. These questions are asked independently in the census, so you're not asked which crop is no-till, just how many acres. So this was a bit of a test to see if this relationship between what we thought were the most readily adopted crops matched up with the area. Back in 1991, using these 23 production systems, there was no significant relationship between the amount of no-till and the amount of soybean and winter wheat that a system was growing. And with only 2% of the land base in no-till, that's not surprising. What's interesting is by 2011, 20 years later, there's a very strong relationship, significant relationship between the amount of no-till seeding and the proportion of cropland in soybean and winter wheat for each production system. So the average back in, 20, we'll just move to the next one. So if we're going to look at the capacity for more no-till hectares, what can we do? If we're assuming that soybean and winter wheat are the most easily adopted acres for no-till seeding, and we use the proportion of no-till in those two time periods, so 1991, that intercept was around 3% of the cropland, and 2011, looking about 61%, sorry, not of the cropland, but of the corn and soybean hectares. If we're looking for additional adoption, if we look at the difference between the total hectares of soybean and winter wheat in the system minus the estimated current no-till hectares. Again, just focusing on those two crops. And I guess with these tables, I just have two tables for those two time periods, just to explain this a little bit. The two columns here, this is the estimated current no-till hectares and the additional no-till hectares of just the corn and soybean hectares. So if you added up those two columns together for a particular system, that equals their total amount of corn and soybean hectares. And all the first column is that 3% in 1991, and by subtraction then of the total, the remaining that would be could additionally be added. In Lake Erie back in 1991, this estimate is at about 15,000 hectares, but there was a potential for another 486,000 hectares. So there was room to gain 400,000 hectares. If we look at 2011, we can see that currently we're over 400,000 hectares. So we've met our target of gaining 400,000. But if we want to do that again, it's going to be very difficult because there's only an additional 280,000 hectares of corn and soybean out there that could have no-till adopted on. The only other thing I wanted to point out with these results is that it's the same top five systems in both decades that are contributing the potential no-till hectares. And this percentage here is just the percentage of this additional hectares to the total additional hectares. So those are our corn, soy, soy, winter wheat, corn, soybean, winter wheat. Again, those are our three dominant ones. Mixed vegetables are grown in rotation with field crops. And then there's also this mixed system out there, which is really hard to define in our system. Still makes up an area, a significant part of the basin. But what's interesting is that back in 1991, there was this, the corn-soy system. There was a large potential for no-till adoption there, the largest portion. But now in 2011, we're really looking at the farmers that are growing corn, soybean, winter wheat in rotation. If you look at the totals in these two periods, you can sort of see how, which is a good news story, is that our corn, soybean, winter wheat rotation acreage has gone up over time. So just in summary then, using this production system approach, we've demonstrated the ability to use the census data to calculate system metrics and compare amongst the systems. And that helps us to understand which production systems have the capacity for different kinds of practice change. So I highlighted tillage today. We're also looking at questions around winter cover crops, manure nutrient assimilative capacity, and manure incorporation, which are in the census. So I'd like to thank assistance from Statistics Canada and some of our Canada staff with the large spreadsheets involved with this, and funding from Growing Forward 2 and our Agri-Ecosystem Productivity and Health portfolio. So any questions?